Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hope you had a great weekend. Back at it on a Monday here in the huddle on ESPN Upstate. Welcome in. It's July 10th. Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert, and Lonzo in studio till 4 o'clock this afternoon. SEC Media Day is underway in Hoover at the Hoover Hyatt. Staying at the luxurious Hoover Hyatt. You're doing something, I guess. We have Greg Sankey, the commissioner, on the podium right now. Hear a little bit from him coming up on the show later. He did refer to the Gamecocks, particularly Dawn Staley and the women, at length in his opening remarks, and he's still on the podium right now. We have on the schedule today Arkansas, LSU, and Tennessee. And Brett Bielema is scheduled to be up about 1:55 this afternoon. Ed Orgeron of LSU, if the schedule holds, would be at around 3:30, and then Butch Jones somewhere around 5 o'clock this afternoon. If they say anything that we want to pass along to you, we'll certainly do that as we go along here. But they did do the Steve Spurrier opener, which I saw, which is pretty good. He talked about talking season. Steve Spurrier is going to be part of the SEC forever. They're just going to keep him coming back.
Probably the king of SEC media days. I mean, you know, the guy, 12 years at Florida and then I guess he made it for 11 at South Carolina. So that's
10 and a half.
20. Well, this event's in July. So he was there for that 2015.
That's right.
And that was his last one. And he was missed last year quite a bit. And so him being kind of honored, I think that's good. I mean, that's kind of, he always said something to get everything going.
Given this Sankey speech, and I listened to a good bit, the first 20, 25 minutes of it, they need something.
Yeah, last year it was just kind of like, where's Steve? I mean, Will Muschamp ended up being kind of stealing the show because he was jovial, and I guess people thought he would be depressed after the Florida thing, and he was joking around with his Florida guys, and everybody's like, hey, Muschamp did a good job. I mean, in watching the coverage on SEC Network last year, Vanderbilt took up a disproportional amount of the coverage. You know, I think every year they kind of find a sleeper team and they kind of pump them up. Vandy, of course, did go to a bowl. But the big note coming out of the event was Nick Saban and Paul Feinbaum getting into it.
Right.
After that, you know, that player that got arrested or whatever. And that was kind of a viral thing. But, you know, this event is – and I used to go to it. I've been to it probably 6, 7, 8 times over the years. It is probably one of the most packed – media saturated to events to where nothing comes out of it.
Nothing comes out of any of these.
Nothing comes out of any conference.
Did you nod off when Sankey was speaking? It's like listening to NPR, and he keeps losing his notes.
Certainly, some days I did it, and it's live when he was there.
Yeah,
he wasn't the
Sankey's
most
new, but
demonstrative guy out there, so it was it's tough, and there's not a lot of news that comes out of it. That's why I don't go anymore, and I send my big Spur guys down there just for the South Carolina day and let them talk because, you know, some of the schools will let the coach talk to the local media before the big gaggle or whatever, and that's always kind of valuable because you have local reporters asking local questions. I'll never forget, I was there 1 year. It was kind of at the height of all this, and Saban talked, and they called on this guy that had some blog that – I think after he wrote 5 stories from SEC Media Days, the blog went away. You know, I don't know how he got credentialed. And he got up and he's like, Coach Saban, I just want to thank you. Roll Tide and Roll Tide to you. And just want to know. And he had this long, drawn-out question where he asked. This is where I started thinking about questions media ask. And that's the root of me being critical of the questions some of the media ask. And after about a minute, he just goes, Roll Tide, thank you very much.
So, you know, we need to find this guy and get him on the show.
Saban gave like a 5-second answer and moved on. And it was the most the guy was crushed. I mean, he's like, oh, coach didn't like my question. Yeah. You know, but it was something about like why he didn't throw the ball more. I mean, it ended up being like an ultra critical question,
right,
you know, from a fan basically that was sitting out there. But
I've had people try to tell me that this conference's media days is a lot better than that conference's media. They're all the same.
It doesn't matter.
They do the same thing.
The ACC, and I don't know how they do it now that they've expanded to 14 teams, but
they do it in 2 days, yeah.
Real kind of laid back, where you sit around a table with a coach or whatever. Yeah.
Well, it's better that it's shorter. Because this thing's 4 days in Hoover. South Carolina's not up till the last day, till Thursday.
Yeah, Gamecocks don't go till Thursday. Last. They're dead last in the whole thing. They're number 14 out of 14. Mm. So by the time that rolls around, there's not going to be but half the audience there or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, Will Muschamp's luck as far as things like this go, it's just, you know, he can't seem to catch a break on the PR from the PR end of things, you know, because you don't get as much exposure if you go at the end.
No.
The day you want to go is the day Alabama's there,
mm-hmm.
because the lobby's packed with fans and it's kind of a festive thing, you know, right there in Birmingham. But you go that last day, the last team on the last day, everybody's kind of got SEC media days fatigue.
They're ready to go home.
Oh,
for sure.
Okay.
All right. Also coming up on the show today, we'll watch that and see if any news is made. Phil Steele, who puts out the big football publication every year, is talking, and he has a team that he says to watch in college football. We'll tell you about that coming up. Hot takes and sausage coming up with JC. A little UFC news over the weekend. On the women's side, had a late scratch from the UFC event on Saturday. Also, we will talk about the Home Run Derby. That's tonight in Miami. Baseball, it's the All-Star break. And where do the Braves stand at the All-Star break? Well, we'll tell you that. Not too far from where they stood a week ago. But they did get a split with Washington. That's a win if you can split with the division leader, I think. So, not bad for the Braves. 844-477-3776. That's our phone number. You can hit us on the text line, as always, at 71307, driven by Carolina Coaches RV Superstore. And we're on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Thought we'd take a look at the South Carolina summer football depth chart that came out over the weekend, JC, and see if there's anything of interest in that. Of course, this does not necessarily mean this will be the starters when game one rolls around. Coming up, what are we looking at? September 2nd against NC State?
Yeah, there's more than a month and a half left before we
almost
start.
2 months, so it could change. But I found a couple of interesting things here, and I thought we'd kind of run through it. First of all, on the offense, no question about quarterback Jake Bentley, followed by Michael Scarnecchia. Nobody listed number three. I don't know who that would be.
Jay Urich right now.
Maybe.
Maybe Danny Gordon, the holder who came in from Miami of Ohio. Maybe Bailey Hart, the walk-on.
Let's hope we don't get down that far.
I mean, look, if this you know, things go sideways with injuries, it's not pretty.
No,
as far as game
really
cuts.
Ugly. But how about running back? They listed three guys equal. Rico Dowdle, Tyson Williams, and A.J. Turner. It's an or situation. So nobody has won that starting job yet, I guess. That's the way it appears. I would think Dowdle will start, though, right?
I don't know. Dowdle and Tyson. I think it's Dowdle or Tyson Williams pushing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But who starts? I don't know. My guess, I'm with you, Greg. I think it would be Rico Dowdle, but Tyson Williams is pretty good player, and A.J. Turner started a lot of the year last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see ultimately what happens. But I think it's probably going to be Dowdle. I think, you know, what they're going to try to do if they can get the run game going is you have Dowdle, who's kind of a between-the-tackles guy, like the thunder guy. I guess people like to use thunder and lightning when you have one back that's fast and one that's not as fast but is better between the tackles. Dowdle will be the thunder, and Williams will be the lightning, I guess, in this situation. I hate to even use that, but that's kind of what I think the plan is. And then Turner as a change of pace guy that can go in and catch passes and things like that.
Right. They listed three wideouts and two tight ends on the offense, as far as positions to start. One wideout starter will be Debo Samuel out of Spartanburg County, of course, who had a good year last year, backed up by Ranricus Davis. Is he ready? Is he healthy?
Well, we'll see. He was kind of nursing injuries. That's the whole key to him. You know, he was coming on, I guess, around the Kentucky game last year, and then it hurt himself and had to shut it down and took a medical red shirt. But, we'll see. You know, if they can get him going, that'd be good. But then there's other options. Corey Banks.
Yep. They list Corey Banks as a possible backup.
And Shy Smith from over in Union. I think could be another guy that steps in there as a slot receiver.
All right. Then wide out, Bryan Edwards as a starter, backed up by Chavis Dawkins from Burns.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. Both those guys good size.
Heard Dawkins had a pretty good offseason at the beginning, maybe not, but then toward the spring, and I know he didn't in the actual spring game, he had a couple of drops, but, you know, he's a guy that they've been happy with his progress this offseason, so we'll see how he does. I didn't think he was that bad as a true freshman mm-hmm. last year.
And then the other wide receiver starter is Terry Guger.
Yeah.
Backed up by Ortre Smith. Are you surprised at all that Ortre hasn't taken the lead in that battle as a true freshman? He's supposed to be a player, man.
I'm not surprised. I think, you know, Terry Guger's a kid that's been in the program now for his fourth year. He's one of those guys that's helped South Carolina that you wouldn't know about. He's never lost a kid that he hosts on an official visit. You know, you have player host on official visits. Mm-hmm. Terry Guger, something like 6-0. They all signed with Carolina. Kind of a glue guy for the program. 7 catches, 66 yards a year ago. Really thought, all right, there was a play in the Georgia game. Orth didn't throw it right to him. He kind of had to go down on his shoestrings and get it. I think if that was a good pass, it was a little out pattern. You know, he keeps going, makes a big play, and maybe that changes the trajectory of his season a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was a little surprised to see him up there. And obviously with Ortre Smith, it's going to be a battle. And then you don't know how many times they're going to run a three wide receiver set with a bigger guy at the slot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because that's the third wide receiver position. But I think what it is they're like, all right, Terry, you've given a lot to this program. You're working hard. You had a good spring. We're going to put you up here ahead of a true freshman, see if you can hold him off, see if you can get some playing time this year.
Yeah. Almost identical size on those two. Guger, yeah. 6'4", 217. Ortre Smith, 6'4", 219.
Yeah.
So, really, you don't give up any size no matter who's in there.
And I fully expect Ortre Smith to play a bunch this year for South Carolina. Just because of who he is, how unique he is, and all that.
Tight ends, two of them. Hayden Hurst, you know about him, and he will be somebody they count on, certainly a great deal. And then the other tight end, Casey Crosby, Jacob August, and Keel Pollard as the backups at tight end.
Yeah, Casey Crosby, Hayden Hurst, they'll get a lot of balls thrown their way this year, especially Hurst. Hurst could be an all-SEC type of candidate, I think. Crosby was one of the most sure-handed players on the team last year. Had four touchdown passes, four touchdown receptions. I think co-team leader in that category with Bryan Edwards. So Crosby will be another guy that's played a lot that can come back and catch some passes from Bentley.
Interesting. You mentioned Shai Smith. He's not on the two deep yet.
No. Well, I mean, most of these guys, none of the guys that just got there are currently on the two deep. You notice there's no Javon Kinlaw, there's no mm-hmm. Dennis Daly, the two JUCOs. Even Caleb Chalmers isn't on the two deep in the secondary. That's probably by design. You know, you kind of make your new guys earn it, and that happens sometimes.
Right.
So I don't even think Marcus Lattimore, Jadeveon and Clowney were on the depth chart when they
in the summer depth
released
chart?
It. Yeah, yep. The first time. Maybe Marcus was. I don't think Clowney was.
Right. On the offensive line, which is going to be so important for South Carolina this year, left tackle Malik Young out of Woodmont High School scheduled to start there.
They slid him over from right tackle. Sort of had an up and down year last year at right tackle. Took over a starting job middle of the year. He's a tough, hard-nosed guy. I really think maybe his long-term best position could be offensive guard, but he's out there at tackle. Sedarius Hutcherson, who's behind him, is a guy that they really like upside-wise. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Hutcherson really challenge Young for the starting left tackle spot. Another thing to watch on this, Greg, is at right tackle they have Zach Bailey right now, who is mm-hmm. their best offensive lineman. If Blake Camper ends up giving them enough to where they can start Blake Camper at right tackle and shift Bailey back inside,
mm-hmm.
I could see them definitely doing that in an attempt to get their best five on the field. But there's a lot of things that are to be determined with this offensive line in terms of personnel. Then there's the performance aspect of it to see what happens there. Yeah.
Left guard Donnell Stanley out of Floydale, South Carolina, who is 6'4", 317, backed up by DJ Park.
Yep. Stanley played at Park. Stanley and Park are kind of the PD. That's the PD connection on the inside. Stanley played at Latta. Park played at Dillon. Both are bigger plus-size guys. Park was ahead going into the spring. Stanley overcame him. And if you remember last year, you know, Stanley got hurt first play of the game against Vandy, only played eight plays and then took a medical red shirt, had to sit out. They were really, really high on him. And that, when they lost him, they felt like that kind of threw the offensive line off a little bit. I noticed he's also 317. He's been 325 to 330 most of the time during his career at South Carolina. So he's a guy that they're kind of waiting on to step up. Same with DJ Park. It's now or never for him.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to watch those two guys.
Corey Helms now a senior. He's the transfer from Wake Forest, right?
Yeah.
And he's listed as number one at right guard. They need him to step up and be big.
Brutally tough year for him last year. He's the LaMarcus Aldridge of the Gamecocks offensive line, a guy that should have been good that really wasn't and had some noticeable whiffs and times where he got dominated last year. Don't know how healthy he was all last season, but certainly – they like his practice. They like his practice effort. They like his work ethic in the weight room. He was the weight room award winner. Just didn't take it to the field last year. Has to do that this year. They're going to have he's not going to play, you know, in my opinion.
Okay, and then at center, it's Alan Knott. Helms will back him up. How are you feeling about Knott this year?
Another guy that should be better than he is that didn't play that well last year. One thing I could see happening if they make the move with Bailey is you could see Helms slide inside the center, which could be his more natural position, and then Knott goes to the bench. But you always want senior starters on your offensive line. Helms and Knott both are seniors, so we'll see how it shakes out. But I understand, you know, a lot of fans saw that today and were like, oh, God, Knott and Helms. And I understand their frustration because individually those guys did not have good seasons last year. But it's a new day, new blocking scheme. You know, less thinking and moving and pulling and all that, and they're just going to line up and go. So maybe those guys end up playing better.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and look at the defense too deep for South Carolina for the summer depth chart just out over the weekend. When we return here, it's Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert, and Lonzo on the Monday Huddle. This is ESPN Upstate. Welcome back into the Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Glad you're along. Monday edition with you till 4 o'clock this afternoon. GMAC, J.C. Sherbert, and Lonzo, 844-477-3776. If you would like to get in with us, and the text line, always open at 71307, use the keyword ESPN. Talking about South Carolina's summer depth chart for football, released over the weekend. Went through the offense earlier. Let's take a look at the defense too deep now, J.C., and on defensive line. It's going to be so important for this team to get something going defensive line-wise. And the two defensive ends, Dante Sawyer and DJ Wonnum, listed as starters. No surprises there, right?
I like that. I thought Sawyer – here's the thing with Dante Sawyer. He got in – he was one of those kids they said – he was going to junior college. They said just, get out early, go get your GED and go to JUCO. He finished up JUCO quick. Came in during the offseason – for 2015, so sat through that mess all year, played a lot, had a good game against North Carolina and then disappeared. There was all kinds of personnel issues that year. Well, then last year he had an injured labrum and sat out after offseason surgery, so he didn't have the offseason program and came in a little bit out of shape, got better as the year went on, did flash a little bit. So now he's had an offseason, and I think that was important for Dante, second year in the system. I expect him to be good. And Wonnum's a guy that played some last year as a true freshman that they're very high on. They moved him over to the Buck during the spring. He's got a little more natural pass rushing ability than some of the other guys. So intrigued by him at the Buck, depending on how much of a jump he makes from the first to second year.
Mm-hmm. Smaller at 251 pounds, so presumably faster.
Yeah.
Coming off that line of scrimmage. The two inside guys on the defense at tackle are Taylor Stallworth and Ulrich Jones, both over 300 pounds. And Jones, they moved him around some, right?
Yeah, well, the old staff got him in from JUCO, and I'll never forget, was watching a preseason scrimmage, and the guy had like two sacks and looked pretty good as a big end. And they moved him over to offensive tackle and then tight end and redshirted him. And then last year he played on the defensive line the entire time. You know, his claim to fame is he was turned out to be a pretty good field goal and PAT blocker. If you remember the one good play in the Clemson game they had, Clemson drove down the field, set up for a field goal attempt early. Somebody came through and blocked it. That was Ulrich Jones. You know, he and Stallworth are seniors. I think there's something to be said for that. You know, you want as many seniors as you can starting, and some of it's out of necessity. But, you know, he's a guy that Muschamp said in the spring has gotten better and better and improved. So hopefully he takes another step because, I mean, it wasn't ideal last year, but hopefully he takes a step.
All right. And your linebackers, they list three as starting linebackers, Bryson Allen Williams, T.J. Brunson, and, of course, Sky Moore.
Yeah, you know, Brunson played a little last year as a true freshman. They're looking for him to kind of lock down the Mike linebacker position. That's kind of his natural spot. He's a real smart player. Played at Richland Northeast High School. Was committed to Louisville most of the time, and then the new staff came in and flipped him. You know, we all know about Bryson Allen Williams. This is his senior year as well. And Sky Moore, you know, they're both seniors. So, again, you know, here's some seniors. You got, you know, so far the players we've mentioned on defense, Sawyer's a senior, Stallworth's a senior, Jones is a senior, Allen Williams is a senior, and Moore is a senior. So in your front seven, that's what, five seniors or six, you know, when you're talking about the totality of it. I think five.
Five, yeah.
So sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes that's a good thing.
All right. So I think they're in pretty good shape at linebacker. Backups at linebacker, Anton Wilder is listed as one backup. And then they just list Moore and Bryson Allen Williams at the other two positions.
Yeah,
and
they may move them around. Some guys coming in, whether that's junior college prospect Eldridge Thompson, whether that's Wilder, who was a safety last year, but's really more suited to play the run, not really a pass coverage guy. You know, whether that's one of the freshmen like Sherrod Green out of Rocky Mount, North Carolina, they're going to have to provide depth at linebacker this year. The good news is, you know, you see the nickelback listed down here, and we're going to talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. South Carolina, their September is full of spread offenses. You know, they play mostly spread teams. And in that case, you go with the nickel, take a linebacker off the field. So that may be a positive for the Gamecocks in the early part of the season while they're getting that linebacker depth going.
Yeah, Chris Lamons will be the nickel. Yes. When they have that fifth defensive back in there.
Yeah, another senior, by the way.
Yeah. All right. And then also in the secondary, your two corners, Jamarcus King and Rashad Fenton. 5'10 for Fenton, and King is 6'2. He's the tallest guy in that secondary.
Yeah, King, you know, was really good up until the Tennessee game. I thought his best game was against Tennessee and then fell off. You know, he got lost in coverage a little bit on this post corner. Ahmad Fullwood from Florida caught it for a touchdown. It's wide open. And from that point on, Jamarcus King played not good. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we all know about the Clemson game where Mike Williams drug him into the end zone. Mm-hmm. Needed to get stronger this offseason. Did break his arm in the spring game, so I don't know how much stronger he's been able to get. They still like him, though. I still think he's got a shot to be pretty good. Just needs to play more consistent, a little bit tougher. And, you know, sometimes when you take your knocks that first year out of junior college, you know, you're a lot better your second year. So the hope is that Jamarcus is that way. And then Fenton sort of got off to a bad start last year in the Vandy game, had a couple of PI calls, and then was hurt for a lot of the year. They still expect big things out of him. As far as a pure cover corner, like a guy that can just go out there and cover, I'm not saying he's the best corner on the team. He's probably the best pure cover corner that they have among the returning players. So him starting at the other corner is probably a positive. That means they can move Lamons to the nickel.
Got a couple of 5'11 safeties in senior DJ Smith and junior Stephen Montack. How you feel about those guys?
I don't know that Montack's quite 5'11. You know, Montack came in from junior college preseason last year, got in a little late, came in, you know, enrolled right before preseason camp, but he's a smart player, is in the right position most of the time, sort of a blue-collar guy, less than ideal athletically. But it's going to help him going through the offseason and all that. You know, DJ Smith sort of is what he is. He's a guy, and if you notice, he's listed as the backup at nickel. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting because DJ Smith, as far as the safeties go, is probably the best at playing the run. He's physical, that type of thing. So if you go with a nickel package against a team that may run the ball but just use different formations like Arkansas does. Arkansas, you know, people think they line up in two back and just run it at you. Well, with their new offensive system, Austin Allen at quarterback, they're going to throw some spread looks at you, but they're still going to run it out of that formation. DJ Smith can help you there. In coverage, though, Smith gets sort of lost. So the backup there, Jalen Dickerson, the true freshman, Really had a good spring for Carolina. Covers a lot of ground. I've said it before. He reminds me of Coe Simpson as a player a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So look for Dickerson to get in there and help on passing downs.
All right. And your place kicker is going to be Alexander Woznik, Greenville guy, Eastside High School.
Yep, Eastside Eagle.
Yep. Have you seen much of him? Do we? How much confidence do they have in Woznik right now?
Strong leg, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, made some and missed some in the spring game, but a strong leg guy, and they like him. I mean, they think he can be the next good one. I think a lot of times with kickers, it comes down to consistency. Michael Allman, I thought, punted really well last year, and he and Joseph Charlton are listed as the either-or punter. But they have to replace both kickers, the long snapper and the holder, and so that's that's the entire special teams unit. So that could be very interesting for South Carolina, or it could be very solid. I mean, you just never know with kickers, Greg.
Yep.
Seen so many kickers that, oh, this guy's going to be good, and he's not, or this, they don't even talk about a guy, and then he goes out and does well. So
Long snapper will be either Ben Asbury out of Atlanta or Harrison Freeman out of Raleigh, North Carolina. As far as kick returns, they list Debo Samuel number one to return kickoffs and Chris LeMond's number one to return punts. What about Fenton? He's had a couple of big runs.
Yeah, and LeMond's did in the bowl game last year too. I think that they're a little more comfortable with LeMond's because he didn't have the injury. But look out. Let me just say this. Look at now kickoff return. I'll say, I think AJ Turner, with him kind of being the third back this year, will probably embrace that role. They may not put Debo back there on kickoff return, or maybe they put both, which would be good. But punt return, I look for Jamias Williams, the true freshman, to ultimately win that job.
Yeah.
He, as far as the high school ranks go, he's one of the best in the country at that. I think he has the chance to be the best return man since Ace Sanders as far as returning punts at South Carolina. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him ultimately win that job. If, you know, with punting there, man, punt returns, it's all about holding on to the football. You got to hold on to the ball.
Yep.
So,
and they've had some issues from time to time with that, for sure.
There is no doubt.
As did Clemson.
Yeah, a lot of teams do. Nowadays, that's the toughest part of returning punts, is catching the ball.
All right, so that's your depth chart for the summer for the South Carolina Gamecocks. If you have any comments on that, you can certainly hit us up at 844-477-3776. And obviously subject to change, and I'm sure will change at least a couple of positions before they kick off the season in early September. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more coming up. This is The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Welcome back in to The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Off the text line at 71307, driven by Carolina Coaches, RV Superstore. Question for you, JC. Are you worried about our offensive and defensive line at South Carolina? If so, which one more? Feel like the rotation of both are thin.
I would say offensive line, just because I think the key to the season, it will be South Carolina's, ability to score points this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think the defense is what it is. You know, I think they're going to try to generate a pass rush. You know, they're very, you know, the good news is they have some seniors on defense. The bad news is they have some seniors on defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys that haven't played all that well or up to their potential during their time at South Carolina. And they're going to use some smoke and mirrors, kind of like they did at the beginning of last season. But as we saw, that doesn't last, you know, especially when you play teams that are really good on offense and prolific. On offense, I just think that these, you know, last year you had a lot of issues that weren't necessarily on the offensive line that looked like it was, you know, a guy coming free off the edge or whatever. There was a lot of miscommunication because of the youth. A lot of times where Jake Bentley and Will Muschamp mentioned it, they had to call it and haul it because you have a true freshman quarterback. He doesn't necessarily know how to change it when you're looking at some more complex schemes. You know, with him being a year older, that's going to change. You know, so I think whereas the offensive line is not going to be ideal, I think they're going to clean up some of that stuff that would look like, oh, they can't block anybody last year. And I think personnel-wise, you know, we mentioned Corey Helms and Alan Knott. They don't perform. Eric Wolford will bench him. He's a guy that's not as hesitant to make a change as Sean Elliott necessarily was.
Hmm.
Now, does that mean the guys behind him will be better? Who knows? But if it can't get any worse, they're going to put him out there. But you know, if I had to worry about one more, it's the offensive line. Not that I think they're in worse shape than the defense necessarily, but that's just such a key to the season because it's a team game and you need all three phases. And I think South Carolina's going to have to win some games on offense this year. And I think they have a chance to be one of the most improved offenses in the country. But if you have continuous blocking breakdowns, not going to happen.
Well, remember, this was an offense that averaged 14 points a game for the first half of last year. 14 points a game.
Oh, they were one of the worst in the country.
It was horrible. It was inept. And they made a dramatic improvement just to the second half of the season.
I think so. And they did struggle against two of the top five, I think, defensive units in the country in Clemson and Florida. Right. I mean, they struggled in those games. But the other ones, they played pretty well. And so I think, you know, especially in the bowl game, there was some good. And look, South Florida is not a defensive juggernaut by any stretch. But you could kind of see some of it coming together in the bowl game in terms of the variety and things like that on offense. So I expect improvement a great deal this year from the offense. And I think it's going to have to be if South Carolina is going to reach its goals.
And he asked also about the linebackers. And just getting Sky Moore back will make a huge difference there, won't it?
I think so, but there is no depth. Let's be clear about that. I mean, they can't have injuries at linebacker. Bryson Allen Williams cannot get hurt. Sky Moore cannot get hurt. T.J. Brunson cannot get hurt because you're going with true freshmen or walk-ons or guys that like Hassan Belton is a player out of Blythewood that's a walk-on there that could get in there and give you a couple snaps or a guy that's converted from DB like Antoine Wilder. So I mean, it's a thin spot at linebacker this year.
All right, want to get into the Home Run Derby coming up, but we will do that coming up after the break. Let me mention this to you, though. We have a new way for you to get our ESPN Upstate app, and a simple way. You can do it via text. You can get the link via text. If you have an Android, just text ESPN Android to 71307. If you have an iPhone, guess what you text? ESPN iPhone to 71307. And you will get a direct link back on your phone, and you just click on that, and you can download the app that way. It's a great way to get the new app. It's new and improved and a great way to listen to us on the go. So, again, depending on your phone or your device, text ESPN Android or ESPN iPhone to 71307. You'll get that link right away, and you can be listening on your device just like that, and we would love to have you along that way. 844-GSP-ESPN. We'll get to the Home Run Derby. We'll have it for you tonight here on ESPN Upstate, and we'll preview it for you next in the huddle. Stay with us. Well, 8 o'clock tonight will be the airtime for the Home Run Derby from Miami, a preview for the All-Star Game, which we'll have for you tomorrow night. Always one of the more interesting spectacles in the baseball season. Will it be Giancarlo Stanton defending his title in front of a hometown crowd? Or might it instead be this guy with the New York Yankees?
The 1-0. Swung on and hit in the air to deep center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Away back off the windows over the Monument Park. Oh, what a home run. All rise. Here comes the judge.
By the way, that's his 30th home run, and so he has now surpassed Joe DiMaggio for rookie home runs.
John Sterling kills me, man. Here comes the judge. All rise. Aaron Judge. Will Aaron Judge win the home run derby? Yeah.
I'm going to go with Judge, man. I'm going to go with Judge. I'm just going to say that. I'm not going to give you any kind of insight as to why. I just feel like this may be, you know, he may be a player of destiny this year.
He's unbelievable. He may hit the longest one tonight. I'll stick with Stanton to win it and say he'll get the back-to-backs. They haven't had that many back-to-back guys. I think Ken Griffey Jr. did it and Cespedes did it, back-to-back home run derby championships. But I'll go with Stanton just because of experience. This is going to be the first one. I mean, for Judge, he's the rookie. You know, will he get a little nervous? Will he, you know, will he have the pacing that's necessary to win this thing against a veteran like Stanton? I'll go with Stanton just for fun.
Shouldn't it be less nerves for something like this, though? I realize you're being showcased, but there's really not that much pressure.
There's not a lot of pressure. No, I'm not saying he's going to be super nervous, but I'll give advantage. And Stanton has got his hometown crowd there. That might help him, too.
Does it come down to who's pitching the ball to you?
Well, you pick your own pitcher, right?
Right. I mean, so you hope that guy is on, the guy you. Yeah. Do you blame that guy?
Yeah, you probably do. Nah, okay. You don't do that publicly. That's bad form to blame your pitcher in the Harlem Derby. Will somebody hit one over 500 feet tonight? I think so. I think Judge will hit one well over 500 feet. He's been crushing some baseballs. So I would like to see that. We know Stanton can do that, too. Stanton can hit it 500 feet. So he might be the guy to do it. But I like Judge for the longest distance home run tonight. And last year when Stanton won it, he hit 61 home runs. Well, they topped that tonight. This is not a super home run friendly ballpark. So that might be. Marlins Park is a little bit tougher than average. As far as hitting them out, I think it ranks 23rd among 30 major league ballparks in home run friendliness. So maybe we don't get a record in that stat. But I think it's fun. If I remember, I'll watch tonight. And if you're out driving around, you can
listen to it. So all that buildup, and then if I remember.
If I remember. I might get busy. You know, that happens sometimes. But it's worth catching. Now we're at the All-Star break. And here's where we are in the standings. The Braves did split. They won 2 out of 4 with Washington. That's pretty good. So they gained no ground, but they lost no ground. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games, and so is Washington. So they've pretty much been at this spot for a while now. 9.5 games back. They've hung right around there for a couple of weeks now.
Still there.
Yeah. But they're in second place. The Marlins are only a game behind the Braves, though, because the Marlins have won 3 in a row now, so they've gained a little ground on Atlanta here at the All-Star break, which is a little more than halfway through the regular season. The Braves have now played 87 games, and the Marlins, or the Nationals rather, have played 88 games here at the All-Star break time. In the Central, the Cardinals and the Cubs are now tied, identical 43-45 records. At the All-Star break, who would have said the Cubs would be 2 games under .500? But they are.
That's surprising.
Yeah, really is. They have not played well. They've lost 2 in a row here lately, and 6 of their last 10. So the Brewers have a 5.5 game lead in the Central right now. The Brewers.
Anybody predict that?
The Brew Crew, yeah. And then the better teams are in the National League West, where the Dodgers are 61-29. That's awesome. They've won 6 in a row. They're hot right now.
Yeah, really good.
The Diamondbacks are 7.5 games back, and they're the second-best team in the National League, and they're 7.5 back in their own division.
What, 15 above 500 for the Diamondbacks?
53-36.
The Dodgers are indeed on a tear.
Yeah, the Dodgers are red hot. Over in the American League, decent race going on there, but the Red Sox have a 3.5 game lead over both the Yankees and the Tampa Bay Rays. In the Central, it's Cleveland by 2.5 at the All-Star break over Minnesota, and Kansas City only 3 back. So Kansas City still in it. Could make some noise, but they're just a game over 500. They've been somewhat disappointing, and they've lost 3 in a row. And the Houston Astros, they won 7 out of 10, 60-29 overall. They're now not the best team in baseball, though. The Dodgers have taken that over with their 6-game winning streak. But the Astros have a 16.5 game lead in the American League West.
They are really, really good.
They're unbelievable.
I mean, they're unbelievable. I mean, you know, like we said, I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day. They were the worst team in baseball, like, not too long ago. So the Houston Astros have really stepped it up big time.
The unbelievable thing about them is their road record, 33-11 away from home. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're road warriors, man. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. So that's where we are at the All-Star break. Some pretty good races. Again, the better races, I guess, the Central in the American League. And in the National League, not so much. Maybe the Central as well with a 5.5 game lead for the Brewers over the Cubs and the Cardinals, but no great records in that Central division in the National League for sure. All right, we'll come back. We'll hear Phil Steele's pick for a surprise team, or maybe not a surprise team, but a team to watch in the college football season coming up. Also, Hot Takes and Sausage with JC is on the way. We'll take your calls, too, at 844-477-3776. If you would like to get in with us here in the huddle on Monday on ESPN Upstate, we'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.